On Tech News Today, Google, Netflix, Amazon, eBay, Twitter, and many other companies finally weigh in on net neutrality. Are they really for it or are they against it? And did Google's co-founders personally poach Facebook employees? And China called Apple's iPhone a threat to national security. What was Apple's response? All the answers and more coming up right now.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, July 14th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/TNT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin. Jason is off today. Anthony Nielsen is filling in for Jason. Our co-anchor today and every Monday is Lindsay Turrentine. Welcome, Lindsay.
Hi.
How are you doing this Monday?
I'm great. It's a beautiful sunny day here in California and happy to be here.
It certainly is. Well, let's jump right in the news. We've got lots of it. Some of the biggest web companies urged the FCC today to retain net neutrality. The advocacy came from the Internet Association, which is made up of 36 companies, including Google, Netflix, Amazon, eBay, Twitter, and others. Now, Lindsay Turrentine, this was something that everybody was waiting for because, of course, when the FCC chairman Tom Wheeler opened up his current proposal, which is, in my opinion, not something that leads to net neutrality, he asked for comments. Everybody was waiting for comments. Some companies weighed in, but the big ones like Google didn't, and now they're doing so through the Internet Association. What do you think about this? Was this surprising to you in any way? Essentially, they support net neutrality, and to me, I think the only super wild card here is that they did something that's unusual, which is that they suggested a revisal of the rules to make wireless content and landline content identical in terms of the net neutrality rules. But what did you think of this?
Well, I thought it was very well organized. And they were waiting for comment. They got it in sort of this big, organized way. And seeing these extremely important companies come together and sort of hold hands to support net neutrality is really important. So I think this is a good showing in support of net neutrality. I think that it's likely to be effective because all of these companies are working so closely together.
I really agree with that. This is going to be effective because these are the big, big companies. And again, especially with Google in there, this is really important. And companies like Google, if you really think about it, they would be more likely to support an absence or a modified version of net neutrality because they have the money. And their money gives them an advantage over small companies. And so really, net neutrality is about startups. It's about innovation. That's one of the biggest reasons to support net neutrality. And the big companies who are already established and have billions of dollars to throw around, in my darkest fears, I fear that they would not support net neutrality because they can afford to pay for special access, and that gives them an advantage in the market.
A lot of Google's growth comes from acquiring small companies that have started because they have the advantage of an open internet. And without that, Google loses its innovation advantage. As much innovation as happens within the walls of Google, probably just about as much happens outside and then is brought in through acquisitions. And that's true for Google, but it's also true for a variety of large internet-based companies. And so I think that is one of the reasons it matters so much to them. And it also, you know, it's a pretty good PR position to be in as well. It certainly doesn't hurt them to support the little guy.
And you pointed out that the letter that was posted by the Internet Association was well organized. It was also well written and very concisely expressed the value of net neutrality. For example, Mike Beckerman, who's the president and CEO of the Internet Association, said, "Segregation of the internet into fast lanes and slow lanes will distort the market, discourage innovation, and harm internet users." I think that's the most concise description of why net neutrality is important, one of the most concise that I've ever heard. So that is a great thing. Well, in just a sec, we're going to talk about the sort of employee poaching scandal that's been going on, and some very high-level famous people are suddenly involved in it. But first, I want to tell you about Personal Capital. Personal Capital is one of our sponsors today, and Personal Capital happens to make a way for you to really get your financial life in order. And they do it because they remove two barriers to you getting your financial life together. One of them is that your accounts, your money, are scattered all over the internet. You know they are. You have bank accounts, you have your 401k somewhere else. They're all over the internet. And it's very difficult to understand what's really going on with your money. And it's very easy to be misled about what's happening with your financial picture. What Personal Capital does is they bring all that stuff together into single views, which you can look at on a tablet, on a PC, on a phone, whatever. You can just get a really intuitive sense of what's happening with your money. And that's super important because you'll always be surprised by what's really happening. When you look at this information, you may have more savings than you thought. You may have fewer assets than you thought. But the important thing is that you can take action, get control of your finances, and you can do it in a way that's more cost effective, because Personal Capital will show you how much you're overpaying in fees. Oh, you're almost certainly overpaying in fees. They'll tell you how to reduce those fees. You can also get tailored advice on optimizing your investment. Personal Capital announced the integration of its award-winning app with Android Wear, Google's smartwatch platform. The update is available for download from the Google Play Store. The Watch app seamlessly integrates with Personal Capital on other Android devices and provides users with relevant and timely updates on their finances wherever and whenever they need it. So it doesn't make any sense to wait. Signing up takes just a minute, and it pays huge dividends. Personal Capital gives you total clarity and transparency to make better investment decisions right away. To set up your free account, go to personalcapital.com/TNT. Remember that Personal Capital is free, and it's a smart way to grow your money. But you must go to personalcapital.com/TNT. That's personalcapital.com/TNT. Well, Lindsay, it looks like Larry and Sergey are enjoying some poached eggheads from Facebook. What's going on?
The Wall Street Journal reports that two Google directors in 2007 suggested, as a way to combat poaching from Facebook, that Larry and Sergey should personally approach Facebook employees to recruit them. And that kind of got squashed. But this all sort of came about because it's some of the documentation in a larger lawsuit suggesting that a number of companies in the Valley colluded to keep employee pay down by agreeing not to poach from one another. So it's part of a much bigger story. It's kind of an interesting little tidbit about the goings on and the strategy about recruiting or not recruiting. We have Jeff Elder here from the Wall Street Journal. He's an investigative reporter, and he wrote this story, and it's a really interesting one. Jeff, do you think that this is embarrassing for Google, which is sort of considered the top recruiting dog in the Valley, or has been for a long time, or do you think they care much about this particular story?
It's definitely embarrassing, Lindsay. That's a very good point. So Google wants to settle this case. They do not want Larry and Sergey and Eric Schmidt up on the stand in front of a jury and the world talking about how they did everything they could to keep Steve Jobs happy and not recruit the workers of four companies that they had agreements with. But then you can see how incredibly ruthless they were in going after Facebook. They talked about having the co-founders of Google personally recruit Facebookers. They talked about giving a competing job offer within an hour to any Googler who got an offer from Facebook. And at one point in this newly unsealed evidence in the court case, a group of Google HR folks approach a group of Facebook recruiters and say, "We're watching you." It's this kind of personal aggression, which is such a stark contrast from Google really playing ball with some other companies and completely hands off. So in this larger case, you're right. This is a very juicy tidbit that shows how bare knuckles the recruiting game can get when those nice rules of collusion aren't in place.
Now, my understanding is that to a very large extent, Google's renewed energy behind recruiting from Facebook was a response to aggressive recruiting by Facebook of Google employees And I do know, I've read a lot of stories about those walks in the forest or whatever that Mark Zuckerberg likes to take with prospective employees. I don't know if that's related to the poaching issue, but are there credible accusations that Facebook itself has done something like this using Mark Zuckerberg's cult of personality or whatever you want to call it, his fame, to recruit employees from Google or other companies?
Well, Facebook rolled into the Valley and played by no one's rules. They were as disruptive to Valley talent as they were to the online experience for everyday people. They were a young company. They were brash. Sheryl Sandberg came over from Google and brought some people with her. But there are people who would say it's supposed to be this way, that people are allowed to work where they want to work and to get paid what they're worth. That's what the plaintiffs are arguing. The defendants are saying something along the lines of what you were just alluding to, Mike, that if there are some sort of rules of engagement in place, you're not constantly patching holes in your workforce or worrying about whose code is walking out the door. So those are the two sides of the court case. What's really sort of a problem here is the incredible difference in behavior when those agreements are in place and when they're not.
Interesting.
Do you think that this has changed much since 2007? And at this point, this was a little while ago, and the landscape has certainly changed. Facebook is much more established. This lawsuit has been going on for some time, so one would assume that these behaviors have probably changed a little bit. What do you think the state of recruiting is like at the moment?
You know, I think a lot of recruiters in the Valley are watching this case. So the settlement has been proposed. Both sides have agreed to it, $324 million. The plaintiffs, the 64,000 tech workers, were seeking $3 billion. If they'd won the case, that would have been tripled under antitrust statutes to $9 billion. So if that $9 billion comes out in a court case, then that is a strong message that says the talent, the tech talent in the Valley, has the power now. If they do the settlement, then it's sort of both sides saying, hey, we made some mistakes, let's move on. So it depends on what Judge Lucy Coe says, maybe today.
Now, this is a kind of a 10,000-foot view, but what do you think about poaching in general? Shouldn't poaching be allowed? I mean, shouldn't there be free speech and free markets for employees?
So there again are the two sides of the court case. And, you know, as a reporter, I don't really get paid to have opinions, but the argument of the tech workers is, hey, we should go to whoever we want to and be able to play that job market. And, you know, tech talent, there is a big market for engineering skills. When you talk to the companies, this is their argument. We have had to collaborate on all kinds of things. Apple and Google, two of the big companies here, had to collaborate a lot on the early iPhone to make sure Google Maps could get on there and Google was the default search engine and that kind of thing. Google had to work a lot with Intel early on, and a lot of these companies sort of had to work together. So if those teams are overlapping and people are going to different campuses to work on shared projects and all of a sudden they're working there and they're leaving, there's a concern there. Hey, we thought we were working together and you just hired a bunch of our people. So that is the defendant argument against the poaching.
Well, Jeff Elder writes at the WSJ.com. You can also follow him on Twitter, Jeff Elder. Jeff Elder, thank you so much for coming on Tech News today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jeff.
We reported last week that China's state-owned CCTV called the iPhone a threat to national security because of its frequent locations feature. Apple responded to the report over the weekend, saying that Apple doesn't share location, that location data is encrypted, and that the frequent locations feature is turned off by default. That was essentially their defense. Philip Elmer DeWitt is an independent technology columnist and wrote about the news for Fortune. Welcome, Philip.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So glad you're here. Now, before we get into Apple's response, can you tell us briefly what the CCTV's report said about the iPhone exactly?
Well, you know, I don't read Chinese, so we're all dependent on the Wall Street Journal's report. And what they said, there was nothing wrong with their report, except for the headline, which said that China labels iPhone security threat. Now, the CCTV has a lot of clout. It is state-run. It can be the mouthpiece for the Communist Party, but it doesn't. They do dozens of stories a day, and they don't speak for China, and they certainly don't control the purchase patterns of 1.3 billion people. In any event, what they said was just what you repeated, was that they said it was a national security threat, that this feature, location tracking, could or favorite locations, rather, could reveal state secrets. What struck me about it was how wrong it was. This isn't actually an old story. You may remember that a few years ago, there was a big fuss about some apps that could look at your iPhone and tell you, and could show you a little map of where you'd been. And it left the impression that Apple was doing this for everybody and knew where everybody in the world would be. And it turned out that wasn't true. You had to actually have control of the phone to look at this data, and they were doing it with randomized, they didn't actually gather this information globally. But what was interesting about we don't know why this happened. There's all kinds of theories. It could have been, it could be that CCTV was trying to support the Chinese manufacturers that compete with Apple in the smartphone space. It could be that there's some kind of subtle message being sent to the U.S. government in response to NSA tracking. There's a Twitter meme active today that links this story to a CCTV anchor being hauled off on bribery charges. Occam's razor suggests there's nothing to connect these two as far as we know. In any event, it was the timing was interesting because Apple had been, I'm told, had been giving background briefings to journalists about its privacy policy. It considers this a strategic advantage. The extent to which Apple bends over not to gather personal information from you, because they don't have to, because they make their money selling high-priced devices. In contrast, as they're happy to point out, to Google, whose Android system controls 90% of the Chinese market, and Google makes its money, and the Android device makers in China make their money by selling your information. It's the old adage, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product. So this was like a slow curve into Apple's wheelhouse. They responded pretty quickly with a detailed response in Chinese and English on their Chinese website. And what they said was, it was a very carefully worded and
I called it masterful. I worked on a column on this over the weekend that will appear on Wednesday. I thought it was masterful PR. It was essentially like a brand of kung fu that called Wing Chun, I think it's called, where you use the opponent's force against them and right. You simultaneously attack and defend. That's a perfect metaphor for this PR thing, in my opinion. That's just what I thought about it. But I assume you agree with that it was a really good PR.
Yeah, yeah. And nobody does this better than Apple. It was also very respectful, thanking CCTV for raising this important message. And it allows CCTV to save face. As it turns out, this I'm told by my readers, who always know more about whatever I'm writing about than I do, that this got a lot of pickup in Chinese media. And in fact, it got more pickup than the original CCTV story. Apple's answer was the dominant story, not CCTV's original charge.
That's really interesting. And, you know, do you think that China as a whole is reacting this way, or if the Chinese government has influence over CCTV's story, do you think that any of this comes from just the sort of looming Apple success in China? And the fact that sort of Apple's a little bit less important in China right now, but is probably on the ascent.
You know, like I say, there could be any number of motivations, and I'm not sure anybody at CTV even knows. I wouldn't be surprised if this is some high level message sending to the government. It is a state run media, and if the party was involved in any way, that would be the kind of thing they would use their TV network for. The economic benefit to Chinese manufacturers seems like a stretch, and the idea that an anchor was bribed by Edelman PR to do something that would help Samsung. I don't even see that it helps Samsung. So you can go down some pretty deep wormholes trying to figure out what the hell is going on.
A lot of criminology involved here. Yeah. Philip Elmer DeWitt writes on Fortune.com, and you can find him on Twitter at Philip Ed. That's P-H-I-L-I-P-E-D. Thank you so much, Philip, for coming on Tech News Today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, Lindsay, it looks like Apple's got an interesting and possibly strange piece of hardware coming down the road. What are they working on?
So FCC documents recently revealed that Apple is working on a physical iBeacon device. iBeacon is a technology that Apple has been using in phones to allow retailers to use a third-party small device to basically pinpoint where users are within a small physical location. Up until now, Apple hasn't made its own iBeacon, the actual device that triangulates with things like iPhones. Now they've submitted the documentation that they'll be making this device. It's very tiny. It's really, it's only like an inch and a half diameter. It's a small type of device. And there are a lot of questions right now about where this device will be used and whether or not it will be simply used in stores and sold to retailers, whether it will be packaged with something else, or whether eventually it may end up in some sort of home automation system created by Apple. So a lot of questions out there right now about this. And I think there's an interesting range of possibilities.
Yeah, and just to be clear about iBeacon, iBeacon is often called indoor location. It works outdoors too, so that's not an accurate description. It's a very fine location that's based on beacons. Beacons themselves cannot harvest information from your phone. They only send out, here I am, and then your phone, if it has the right kind of app and it supports Bluetooth 4.0, whether it's Android or Apple, can read an Apple iBeacon. And the other thing is that iOS 7 turns every device that runs it, either an iPad or an iPhone, into an iBeacon. And, of course, I don't really understand why they have a USB support. This technology that we're talking about here actually has a USB port, and it's not really clear why that's the case. I mean, you can just build the iBeacon capability into most devices. Presumably, this is so you could use it with a desktop. You just have a little dongle or something like that that turns this little iBeacon into a beacon for devices that, you know, like desktops that don't support Bluetooth 4.0. But I would think that Apple would just want to make everything support Bluetooth 4.0. I know their laptops do. So that's one of the strange things about this, is that it actually supports Bluetooth 4.0.
Well, I can see this as possibly something that they're going to be using almost just themselves to test different automated systems, right? You can imagine third-party developers working with the HomeKit spec to use something like an iBeacon with some hardware that maybe they're building for, I don't know, a Nest-like experiment, something around the house. There's been talk about this working with something like an Apple television to work as a sort of a hub for a home, for some sort of home automation system. It sort of seems like the sky's the limit, and this may just be setting the groundwork for something much more integrated in the future.
It's an interesting idea, and I personally believe that the amount of attention in the press, and especially within the public, that iBeacon gets is way too low, considering the impact that iBeacon and beacon technology in general is likely to make. I think it's going to be massively transformative to, as you said, home automation, definitely retail, and all kinds of things we probably can't think of right now. In terms of retail, I think that Apple's going to make a big play for brick and mortar e-commerce. They're going to turn every kind of store into an Apple store type of experience for buying things, where cash register is gone. Everything's done wirelessly through phones. And I think that it's massive technology. And I think every little story like this, especially when Apple itself is making hardware, is super, super important.
Well, and I think that you're absolutely right that Apple's heading down that road. And it's so important to Apple because Apple, you know, as we've talked about on the show before, Apple, because of iTunes and because of its ecosystem, has access to so many credit cards, so much purchasing information. Building out that retail experience with third-party retailers is really going to be one of the only ways that Apple can ultimately compete against something like Amazon, which just essentially owns retail. So this could be a huge part of that. It'll be really exciting to see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe the number is something like 800 million credit cards that Apple has. Don't quote me on that, but it's more than anybody else. They have more active credit cards than any other company on the face of the earth. Well, the man who founded both Google X Labs and led the Google Glass project is leaving Google and moving to, drumroll please, Amazon. Babak Parviz announced the move in a cryptic but unmistakable post on Google+. This is really surprising, Lindsay. Amazon is not, they do some research, but their research is very tightly focused on their tablets, their phone, and not much more than that. They really are not the kind of company like Google is, where they're just churning out all kinds of moonshot projects and so on. This guy's a moonshot guy. His life's work, his passion, is to one day develop contact lenses that work like Google Glass, where you just put this thing in your eye, and now you have contextual information just in front of your face. What's he doing in Amazon? What do you think?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I wish I knew, but I think that, just the fact that that particular project is his passion is really interesting, because if you think about the Amazon, Amazon's new project with its new phones to help you quickly identify things in the physical world and match them against Amazon's databases, gosh, imagine what knowledge about something like a Google Glass or sort of what I like to call face-based tech could do for retail. Is a little bit terrifying, actually. But I can see that all of his really interesting research at Google might be applied a little bit more strategically at Amazon. I mean, the thing about working at Google, I'm sure, is that it's really fun and the sky's the limit, and you get to talk about all kinds of crazy technology that may or may not work someday. But maybe just at a human level, he wants to see his tech come to life and actually do something in the world, and this is a chance to do it.
And yet another possibility is they want him both for his expertise. I mean, he's been working on smart optics for decades, literally, but also his expertise in building a lab. I mean, he was one of the founding people behind Google X Labs, and he knows how to put together a lab, how to hire people. Maybe, we were talking about poaching earlier. He was apparently poached. He can poach more people. He's the kind of person who, within academic circles, it's a small world that does that kind of smart optics. He could be super influential at allowing Amazon to attract all kinds of other brilliant scientists and inventors. So that could be a big part of it as well. But it's a really surprising move as far as I'm concerned.
It'll be really interesting to see what Amazon comes up with. I mean, Amazon, as we know, is in it for the long haul.
Yep.
They plan for the very long game, and so it'll be interesting to see where he takes them, for sure.
And they're in it to win it. Well, I'm really looking forward to that big, giant iPhone, and I'm really potentially tempted by it, but it looks like I may have to wait a little bit. What's going on?
9to5Mac reported that a well-sourced security analyst says, and this is not the first time that this rumor has bubbled up, by the way, that the larger of the two rumored iPhones, the 5.5-inch iPhone 6, is going to be delayed until after October and potentially into 2015. This analyst, whose name is Ming-Ching Ko, says that the supply challenges related to the size of the iPhone are creating this slowdown, and he has concerns that the larger, probably sapphire screen won't pass drop tests. And, this is the kind of leak that often has legs and is I think could be real. I think that it's not too unusual for Apple to sort of slowly release these new products and kind of focus on one thing at a time. So I don't actually think it's that surprising, but what do you think, Mike?
Well, first of all, I'd like to reiterate that Ming-Chi Kuo is really a reliable source for these sorts of things. He's not always right, but he's most of the time he's dead on. So this is a pretty reliable leak. Otherwise, I don't think we'd be covering it if it was just something that emerged by some random stranger. This guy nobody's talking about. The other thing is that, it's exactly as you say. Apple tends to not want to ship it until it's really ready. And presumably there's some, delay that could cause them to go on to next year. And that is the kind of thing Apple would do. I think it'll be problematic for them on Wall Street because everybody's really counting on this. And I think they'll have to announce it. They'll have to announce, if they come out with a new smaller iPhone and say that the other one's coming out later, they're going to have to say that when they announce the new iPhone. Otherwise, they'll be accused of a sort of pulling a fast one by getting people to buy the small one and then expecting them to upgrade to the big one early next year, assuming that's when it ships. So they've got to be careful here. I think they have to announce them both. And, I think we've been waiting for a big iPhone for, 4 years or more? I mean, it's just ridiculous. in this market how small the regular iPhone is, and Apple has really got to get that big iPhone out there.
Well, what's interesting about this is that I'm actually sort of curious about the timing, because recently analysts have suggested that Samsung has seen a softening in their tablet market, and some analysts have essentially blamed the Galaxy Note, which pioneered in many ways the success of the very large phone, has blamed the Note for a softening of Samsung's tablet sales. It's sort of saying that they're eating up their own tablet market. We know that Apple is very, very careful with supply chain questions. They want to make sure that their supply chain is healthy. Tablet sales are very important in the holiday season because they're an easy gift. They generally don't come with a contract. I can see Apple having there being some small benefit from a slight delay in a scenario in which they get to sort of announce a bigger phone and say it's coming, but you know, for now here's a slightly bigger phone. So it's interesting timing for sure.
So one additional thought on this whole issue, and that is that if they were going to delay their smartwatch, the rumored iWatch, it makes a lot of sense to also delay the larger phone. If you have a small phone that's very portable, very mobile, the need for a wearable device that gives you notifications on your wrist is reduced. The larger the device, the larger the phablet. Phablets tend to lend themselves to wearable devices because if it's this big giant thing and you have it in your purse or you have it in your backpack or whatever, and you're slightly less likely to carry it around in your pocket, for example, then the smartwatch or the wearable, whatever it is, becomes more valuable. And so we've seen Sony struggle with it. They've always coupled their wearable devices, the peripheral devices to phones actually, to their gigantic phablets. And so that could be a hint. Again, I don't want to spread a rumor here, but it's just an idea that they would want, that they see that the phablet size form factor as going hand in hand with the tiny iWatch.
That's a really interesting idea, and it's possible. Although I sort of feel like God help us if that still rumored product is also delayed, it will be the slowest year in the history of Apple if that's the case.
Yeah, that would be really bad. But you know, again, it's not really clear that Apple's ready to ship that smartwatch. I mean, the rumors are currently, I think, September, yeah. But we'll see. I mean, that was the rumor for the big iPhone too. So we'll see what happens.
That's true. Good point.
Well, just a sec. We're going to read a very nice email sent to us by one of our fans. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace. Squarespace is one of the sponsors for today's show. And this is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. I've been using Squarespace for years, and I love Squarespace. They have 25 beautiful templates for you to start with. And they've recently added a logo creator tool. That's right. If you're not a designer, if you're like me and have no design skills whatsoever, this is a place where you can go to design your own logo. And your logo will end up looking really good and really professional because they have all these easy-to-use tools that will help you build a really great logo for your business, your project, whatever it is you need a logo for. The Logo Creator tool is the place to do it. And you can check that out on their blog, blog.squarespace.com. There's a really cool video there. Squarespace is also super easy to use, but if you ever need help, you can use their live chat or email support, which is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they really know what they're talking about. I really like using Squarespace support. Now, if you want to sell something or you want to raise money, Squarespace is the place to do it. Squarespace e-commerce support works on every Squarespace template design they have. And you can sell digital goods, physical goods, doesn't matter. You can do it all with a single interface on Squarespace. And of course, digital goods are delivered via customized email links that expire 24 hours from delivery. Very helpful. And you can track customer activity using a marketing pixel or include an affiliate program tracking script, which all this kind of stuff, if you've ever sold anything online, you know how important and powerful these kinds of tools are. Now, the e-commerce works perfectly with the Squarespace developer program. So if you have a developer on your staff or you're a developer yourself, you can create custom Squarespace stores with a totally unique design. Don't worry if you're not a developer. You don't need these tools. You can still use the e-commerce feature without any development skill whatsoever. You can also have the ability to accept donations, which is great for nonprofits, cash, wedding registries, school fund drives, you name it. If you need to get donations, Squarespace is the place to do it. And of course, you can create flexible coupons that apply to all orders or orders that meet certain minimum criteria or for specific products. Very flexible couponing, which is very powerful. They have unified inventory management, express checkout mode, data export, social integrations, order confirmation emails, and so much more. And it's all, of course, completely secure. It starts at just $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Squarespace takes care of the hosting, so you don't have to, and their hosting is best of breed. Don't wait. Start your free two-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT to get 10% off and to show your support for Tech News Today, and we really appreciate that. We also thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Well, one of our TNT fans sent us a really nice email, and I'd like to read it to you. He said, his name is Anthony Burns. He said, as I read the Wall Street Journal's Marketplace section this morning, I realized that I had already heard all the stories contained within the pages, as well as in-depth interviews and analysis with your guests yesterday. The Wall Street Journal already has my money for the next year, but TWiT will get the information to me first and in a better format. Thank you for your great work, and we thank you for that very kind email. Personally, we tend to think of ourselves as a supplement to more general business news, but we certainly do try to cover all the most important stories in the best way we can. And we do appreciate the Wall Street Journal because, as you saw on today's show, Wall Street Journal reporters often make the very best interview guests because they are really awesome journalists. Well, Lindsay Turrentine, that is the Tech News Today. Thank you so much for making Monday awesome as usual.
Thank you for having me. It's really fun to be doing this. I love it.
All right. I'm so glad you do. We love having you on. So we'll see you next Monday.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. You can subscribe to Tech News Today on iTunes, YouTube, Feedly, Yahoo, RSS, or many other options. Choose your favorite and subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. And follow us on Twitter. Tech News Today TV is our Twitter handle. And please send us your thoughts and opinions. Send email to tnt@twit.tv or leave voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. Also, don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on the TWiT Network. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.